I actually wanted to start by thanking my brother. His name is Jonathan Weiss, because he called out the Kollel and he wanted to dedicate this shiur, or really this series, both series, and of course, not to mention last night. But he wanted to dedicate this shiur Le'ilo Nishmat, his sister-in-law, Elisheva Sarah Yael Bat Gershon, who was my age. She actually was Nifter right before she turned 34. She was really a wonderful, wonderful wife to my sister-in-law's brother, wonderful mother to her three children, and she should be a Meilitz Yosher, I don't even know how to say that, for everyone. But really thank you to my brother for sponsoring the series, Le'ilo Nishmata. It's really, really beautiful. Okay, so last month, it was a while ago, it's not like our previous year, part one was last week, so I just want to review a little bit, especially for those who might not have been here with us. We spoke about the foundations of women and their engagement with the world of Talmud Torah and its development in Jewish law. So just as a very quick recap, we learned from a Gemara in Kiddushin that women are exempt from Talmud Torah, meaning they do not have to learn Torah and their fathers do not have to teach them Torah, implying that women are still allowed to learn Torah, they are just not obligated in learning Torah. That's what we learned from the Gemara in Kiddushin. And then we learned from a Gemara in Sota the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, who stated that if a man teaches his daughter Torah, it's as if he has taught her Tiflut. And we discussed that, you know, Tiflut might mean Divrei Havai, foolishness, trivialities. It might mean immorality. There are different ways of interpreting it. It's certainly something negative. And we learned that this opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, although not brought down as in the Gemara, as, you know, a halacha that we must follow, is quoted by the Rambam, and later by the Shulchan Aruch, who quotes the Rambam's words exactly when codifying the law. However, we learned that the Rambam's words surrounding his quotation of Rabbi Eliezer's statement come along with a number of qualifications to Rabbi Eliezer's statement. The first qualification is that Rabbi Eliezer was only referring to teaching women Torah Sheba Al Peh. Only teaching women Torah Sheba Al Peh was considered to be Tiflut, whereas teaching them Torah Sheba Chtav, while the Rambam did not feel that it was to be done l'chachila, he agreed that it was not, or he claimed that it was not considered to be as if one taught his daughter Tiflut if he taught her Torah Sheba Chtav. So that's the first qualification. Now, Rabbi Eliezer's statement does not apply to Torah Sheba Chtav, only to Torah Sheba Al Peh. The second qualification is that Rabbi Eliezer's statement is only referring to teaching a woman Torah Sheba Al Peh in depth, but women are still obligated to learn, according to the Ramah, the mitzvot that are relevant to them, the halachot that they have to keep. How are they supposed to know how to keep these halachot if they don't learn the background of these halachot? The third qualification of Rabbi Eliezer's statement is that the Rambam believes that it applies to most women, but not all women. Not every single woman was forbidden based on Rabbi Eliezer's statement, only most, and those few select women, according to the Rambam, who have sufficient motivation to learn on their own, not those who need to, you know, who are just going to learn if their father teaches them, but those women who are sufficiently motivated to learn on their own, then they may study Torah on their own, even including Torah Sheba Al Peh. And she gets a reward for that learning that she engages in. The fourth qualification was the way that the Rambam introduced Rabbi Eliezer's statement with the phrase of Tzivu Chachamim, that our rabbis have commanded. And notably, the Shulchan Aruch, when bringing the Rambam down the halacha, includes these words, Tzivu Chachamim lahalacha. And we discussed that Tzivu Chachamim, throughout the Rambam, denotes not a halachically binding authoritative statement, but rather an opinion, a rabbinic piece of advice that was generally given for the time period in which it was appropriate. So for example, right, he says, Tzivu Chachamim, women should not go to the marketplace more than once a month. They shouldn't even go outside their house more than once a month. And we discussed how Tzivu Chachamim is rabbinic advice, advice that makes sense based on the current realities and social norms, but it doesn't necessarily mean, or it doesn't necessarily mean to become a binding halachic principle that would be binding in all generations and all societies, etc. Something that is introduced with Tzivu Chachamim may in fact change as society changes and as the times change. In this light, right, in the light of understanding everything that we did last time and all the background of the lamdas, so to speak, of women in learning and learning Torah, what I'd like to deal with tonight is try to understand how these sources were understood in different generations. And I'd like to begin from classical times and go all the way through to our time, right? How was Jewish education for girls? How is it viewed? What was done? What was the Jewish education given for girls throughout our history? So let's start first in classical times. The Gemara in Sanhedrin in source number 1 tells us about the time period of Chizkiyahu. Just to give you some background, Chizkiyahu was a king of Malchut Yehuda about halfway, midway through the Bayit Rishon period, during the first temple period. And he lived during the time of Yeshayahu Hanavi, who was very close to Yeshayahu Hanavi. And he also lived at the time during the Galut Aseret HaShvatim, when the Assyrians, under the leadership of Sancheirev, came down to Malchut Yisrael, the northern kingdom, and exiled the 10 tribes to a place we know not where they are, right? Over the Samajon, we don't know where they are. And Chizkiyahu himself had to deal with the Assyrian army as well, but Hashem miraculously saved Yerushalayim during his time. Now, his father was a terrible, terrible king, and yet Chizkiyahu turned things around and eradicated all of the Avodah Zarah in the kingdom and really led a kingdom and a people who was very committed to Hashem. And one of the ways he went about that was by instituting educational reform, right? The only way to get a people from having worshipped Avodah Zarah only 2 years ago to worshipping Hashem is to educate them, is to teach them Torah, is to, you know, really provide them with the skills and the tools and the knowledge necessary to worship Hashem in the correct way. And so we're told in source number 1, Chizkiyahu, in the times of Chizkiyahu, Batku midan va'ad Be'er Sheva, they checked from Dan in the north to Be'er Sheva in the south, which is really just symbolic for throughout all of the territory of Eretz Yisrael, from one boundary to the next, V'lo matzu am ha'aretz, and they did not find one ignoramus. They did not find one person who was uneducated, right? Migeve v'ad antiparis v'lo matzu tinok v'tinoket ish v'isha shelo hayu b'kiin v'hilchot tuma v'tahara. They did not find throughout the entire land a baby boy or a baby girl, a man or a woman who wasn't a bucky, who wasn't an expert in the laws of tuma and tahara, purity and impurity. So we see from here, according to the Gemara and Sanhedrin, that even in the times of Chizkiyahu, women were being educated. Certainly in mitzvot that were applicable to them, because women were going to the Beit HaMikdash to bring karbanot just like men. And so they had to know the laws of when they were able to go to the Beit HaMikdash and when they weren't, just like men. This is a very clear example from the time of the Tanakh. Centuries later, the Mishnah records a statement in source number 2, in the Gemara Nedarim, it's really the Mishnah Nedarim, that states, Matnitin, Aval Malamid Hu et Banav ve'et Benotav Mikra. That a man is, well, let me just give you some background. This is talking about a man who has taken a neder not to derive hana'ah, any pleasure, from another person. Why he might take that neder out, we're not going to get into. But we are told that he, even if he takes a neder, that he may not derive pleasure from this other person, he is still allowed to do certain things for this person or with this person, because of the concept of mitzvot le'lehanu nitnu, that mitzvot are not given for the purpose of deriving pleasure, and therefore, even if you make a neder not to derive pleasure from someone, you're still allowed to engage with them in mitzvot, because mitzvot had nothing to do with pleasure. And one of the examples of a mitzvah that this man can still engage in with this other man, against whom he swore that he would not derive pleasure, is Milamid Hu et Banav et Benotav Mikra, that he is allowed to teach the text of the Tanakh to this man's children. Even though he's not deriving pleasure from this man, he's allowed to teach this man's children Tanakh. Banav Ubenotav, his sons and his daughters. Full disclosure, there are Nuskaot of this Mishnah that do not include the word Benotav, but the Rush has our version, and it is the version that is printed in our Mishnayot today. So it definitely does seem that according to the Mishnah, girls could be taught the Tanakh. Now, during the time of the Gemara itself, right, we went from the times of Chizkiyahu during Bayit Rishon to the times of the Mishnah, which was written at the end of the Bayit Sheni period, and now in the times of the Gemara, hundreds of years later, excuse me, the majority of Jewish women were not formally educated at all during the times of the Gemara, either in secular knowledge or in Jewish knowledge. They were largely illiterate. They did learn things at home from their mothers, so they learned how to act, they learned how to keep mitzvah, they learned how to run a Jewish home. And, you know, from their grandmothers who lived in their homes, from their mothers-in-law when they got married, they learned things from the home. However, as we learned last month, there were there were a significant number of women who lived during the times of the Gemara who were educated, who displayed that drive, that sincere motivation to learn Torah that enabled them to become experts in Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh, like Bruria, right? And like the daughter of Shmuel ben Eli of Baghdad, who used to give a shir to the men behind a mechitza for tznius purposes. So we know that even during the times of the Gemara, even though many of the women were not educated, there were still, you know, singular women who were. Moving on to the medieval period and early modern times, what was Jewish education? What did Jewish education look like then? So it's very interesting, but really there are several sources from the Middle Ages, and this has become a whole topic of research in and of itself. Actually, I did a paper of mine in Revel when I was getting my master's in Tanakh. I was able to take, I don't know how many, two Jewish history courses. And one of the history courses I took, I remember I had to write a paper, and I chose the topic of women's education in the Middle Ages. So it was nice actually having to go back to that paper. It was like 20 pages long, to find some primary sources. And there are actually several sources that reference Jewish girls' education in medieval times. One of which is the testimony of a student of the famous Christian scholar, Peter Abelard. And in source number 3, he lived in Paris in the 12th century. And he says, if the Christians devote one son to learning, it is out of self-interest, so that he will be able to help his father and mother and brothers. And since he has no heirs, the other sons will inherit him. Right? Because if he's going to learn and become a priest, he won't have any children, and then the other sons will, you know, the other sons won't have to divide their estate with his sons. But the Jews send all their children to study out of religious zeal and love of the law. Even the poorest of the poor, even should he have 10 children, will teach them all, not for any mercenary consideration like the Christians, but solely in order for them to understand God's law. This includes not only his sons, but his daughters as well. And so here we have a testimony of a Christian man who testifies that girls were given a Jewish education during the Middle Ages. We know that in the 15th century in Rome, a girls' Talmud Torah was established for religious education. And women were exposed to the world of Bible study as well. Some were taught Parsha at their father's Shabbos table, right, at their Shabbos table by their fathers. Others, you know, went to shul and heard the rabbi's drasha each week. And so the girls were exposed, either in a formal Talmud Torah in Rome in the 15th century or at home and in shul. They were exposed to some Torah learning. There is even some evidence that throughout the Middle Ages, women became teachers of Torah. I think the Rambam was even given a shaila. I don't think I brought it, but the Rambam was given a shaila about a woman who was teaching boys, and that was the background, and then the shaila had to do with something else, and he didn't even question that. He just moved on to answering the shaila. It definitely did happen in different societies throughout the Middle Ages. As we discussed last year, Rashi, who lived in the Middle Ages, taught his daughters, and their descendants often became very scholarly and knowledgeable in Torah study as well. There's even more evidence that Rashi lived in the 11th century, so his descendants lived in the 12th, 13th centuries. There's evidence even later in the 15th to 16th centuries that there were several women who reached high levels of scholarship in Torah also. However, once we get to the 17th and 18th centuries, moving further into the early modern period, it seems that girls were taught virtually nothing outside of the home. They learned things, they learned how to act, they learned how to keep a Jewish home from their mothers and grandmothers and ultimately from their mothers-in-law, but there wasn't any formal education outside of the home. A breakthrough in Jewish girls' education actually occurred in the 19th century in Frankfurt, Germany, in a school established by Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. And this could be considered the first good Jewish day school of modern times. And in this Jewish day school, there were matriculated boys and girls. I believe they were in separate classes, but they had the same curriculum. So the boys and the girls learned separately, but they learned the same subjects, the same topics in Torah. And this was a natural evolution, since in the gymnasia in Germany, the girls and the boys both attended and learned similar curricula as well. So it wasn't such a novelty to be educating girls in Western Europe, at least in Germany, in the 19th century. There is a debate, however, about how rigorous the curriculum was. I read somewhere that the curriculum was very rigorous, while others claim that it only offered one period a day of Jewish studies or Hebraic studies, whereas the rest of the day was devoted to secular subjects. I'm no scholar. I don't claim to be, so I'm not sure which is true. But either way, the girls and the boys were offered the same Judaic education. You know, the disagreement is to what extent that education was offered, but it was definitely offered. And this actually follows logically from the way that Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch interprets a pasuk in Shema, in his commentary to the Torah. If we turn to source number 4, as you may know, Rav Hirsch wrote in German, and his commentary was then translated into Hebrew and into English. So the Hebrew here is, usually we like seeing things in their primary source, so you want to read the Hebrew if we understand it enough to understand it, because then you won't lose anything in translation. But whether we do Hebrew or English here, it'll be lost in translation. So let's just do the English because it's easier for us. And Rav Hirsch is commenting on the pasuk in Shema, "V'limazetem otam ebeneichem," that you should take these mitzvot and teach them to your children. Limud, right, learning, encompasses more than shinun. And here he's differentiating between this pasuk, "V'limazetem otam ebeneichem," and the pasuk that we have in V'yahata, "V'shinantem levanecha v'dibar tabam." And he says here that limud encompasses more than shinun. This pasuk of limud means teaching more or in greater depth than shinun. For as we have already explained, right, in that pasuk, shinun means the teaching of the content of the mitzvot in short, concise sentences. Vishinantam levanecha means just letting your children know about what the mitzvot are. Limud, he says, goes a little bit further. This would account for the source of the halachic inference, b'neichem v'lo b'notechem. If you recall, the whole discussion of women's being exempt from Talmud Torah and the Gemara and Kiddushin was based on our pasuk right here. The pasuk says that you should teach them to your sons, and it says sons and not daughters, and that's where the Gemara learns that women are not obligated in learning Torah the way that men are. Right? As he continues, this halacha exempts the father from teaching Torah to his daughter, but is derived from v'limazetem otam ebeneichem, not from v'shinantam levanecha. He notices that the Chazal, when learning out women's exemption from Talmud Torah, learn it only out from this pasuk here in Perek Yud Aleph of Devarim and Vahayam Shamoa of Limazetem Otam Abeneichem. But that they do not refer at all to the pasuk in V'ahavta V'shinantam Otam V'shinantam Levanecha V'dibar Tabam. Therefore, he learns, the father is exempt only from the duty of imparting to his daughter Torah erudition, Lamdanut. For the duty to acquire and transmit Torah erudition devolves on the Jewish man. What is the exemption referring to, says Rav Hirsch, the exemption discussed in the Gemara of Kiddushin? Only deep scholarship, erudition. But that understanding of the literature of Judaism and that knowledge of the mitzvot that are essential for the fulfillment of v'yiru et Hashem Elokeichem v'shamru la'asot et kol ha'divrei ha'Torah hazot. However, that which is necessary to develop a sense of awe of Hashem, to fulfill the mitzvah that is, by the way, obligatory to both men and women alike, to have Yirat Hashem, to fear God. Well, in order to do that, we need, according to Rav Hirsch, a basic understanding of the literature of Judaism. We need knowledge of the mitzvah. And that must be imparted to our daughters no less than our sons. This is evident already from the mitzvah of Hakel. For it says there, and we discussed this last week, but we'll review here, last month, Hakel ata'am ha'anashim v'hanashim v'hataf. Gather together, congregate the entire nation, the men and the women and the children, leman yishmeu uleman yilmedu v'yiru et Hashem, so that they can hear the Torah, so that they can learn the Torah, so that ultimately they can learn how to fear God. Even though our sages comment on that verse, anashim ba'im lilmod, nashim ba'ut lishmoa, that the purpose of learning was only for the men, and the purpose of hearing was only for the women, leman yishmeu does not mean just hearing, but a proper understanding, which is considered learning. And he bases this on Rashi and Tosfot there. And so Rav Hirsch explains that the mitzvah of Hakel includes women. And even though Chazal differentiated between the purpose of Hakel for men and the purpose of Hakel for women, Rav Hirsch says, and I skip this inside, but Rav Hirsch says that the yilmedu of men means that they should learn so that they can teach. The yishme'u of women means that they should hear and understand so that they can learn. Not necessarily so they can teach. They're exempt from teaching, but they have to learn. The Mishnah in Nedarim, which we just quoted, 35b, speaks of teaching Tanakh to girls. As far as we can discern, the Tosfot Yom Tov's view, that the version of the Mishnah is incorrect, I told you that there were different Girsaot and Nisraot of it, is contradicted by the Gemara's explanation. He claims that even though there are different Girsaot, some that include Benotav and some that don't, the Gemara's explanation of this Mishnah requires us to believe that the Girsa that includes Benotav is the correct one. Even according to the view of the Ran, that Benotav are not mentioned in the Mishnah explicitly but are only tacitly included, which is a different opinion, it is clear that the Stam Gemara recognized Lima Torah Labano. It is clear that the Gemara recognized the value of educating our daughters in Torah. And from the whole give and take of the discussion there, it is clear that the limud itself is a mitzvah, as we discussed before, right? The whole purpose, the only reason why this is allowed is because it's a mitzvah and therefore cannot be deriving pleasure from this other person. This has always been the educational practice, proof of which is a whole literature of Jüdisch Deutsch, I'm sorry, I did not pronounce that correctly and I apologize, which is German and Hebrew letters, written primarily for the women to enable them to understand the Bible and the liturgy. Right? Tanakh and the Siddur and the Machzor, and to impart to them a general knowledge of the Halakha and of the moral teachings of the sages. And so it becomes very clear here that Rav Hirsch in the 19th century very much believes in the value of girls' education. Practically, he didn't just believe in it, but he made it practical in that he educated both girls and boys in the same school. In fact, my own great-grandmother went to this Talmud Torah in Hamburg. I mean, my mother's parents were both from Hamburg. And I know that my umama, my great-grandmother, went to a Talmud Torah. So when I was reading about Sarah Schneer, I said to my mom, like, you know, I don't understand. If Rav Hirsch did it first, why does everyone ascribe all of women's education to Sarah Schneer? And while we're going to learn about Sarah Schneer in a moment, and what she did was amazing, it is important to note that girls' education was started in Western Europe before the 20th century, that it was begun by Rav Hirsch in the 19th century. While this was happening in Western Europe in the 19th century, however, it was very much not happening in Eastern Europe at that very time. Even at the turn of the 20th century, whereas the vast majority of boys and men were learning Torah and not learning any secular subjects, the women and girls of Eastern Europe were given the exact opposite experience, in that they were not given any Torah education. They were only given access to secular education, prompted primarily by compulsory laws in many Eastern European countries that every single child had to go to school in the mornings, and that meant that they were going to public schools, and therefore they were exposed to secular education, but there was nothing for them to supplement their secular education with anything Jewish. Unfortunately, because these girls in the beginning of the 20th century were exposed to elementary and some high school levels, but mostly elementary school levels of secular education, and they were not given any equitable access to Jewish education, unfortunately, what started happening was that girls started to leave the fold because they were stimulated and challenged and thinking about, you know, all the wonderful ideas out there in the world, and they weren't made aware of any parallels available to them in their own heritage. And so what they started to do is they started to find the secular world and the secular ideas very enticing, because there was nothing that enticed them from their own homes. And the Chafetz Chaim in 1911 noticed this problematic trend of what was happening with the young Jewish girls. And when he published a sefer called Likutei Halachot, he included a footnote which stated the following. If you turn to source number 5, this is a footnote to the Likutei Halachot on Sota, which is the Gemara of Rabbi Eliezer's statement that if you teach your daughter Torah, it's as if you're teaching her Tiflut. Rehamelamed abito Torah, dot, dot, dot. That's how we're beginning. That's a quote of Rabbi Eliezer's statement. Nir'as, says the Chafetz Chaim, it seems, dekol zeh dafka bizmanim shelefaneinu. It seems to me, says the Torah, says the Chafetz Chaim, that everything Rabbi Eliezer said, that teaching Torah to women is like teaching her Tiflut, was specifically relevant to the previous generations, to the generations before our time. Shekabalat ha'avot haitza chazaka me'od eitzal kol echad ve'echad. Because in previous generations, girls lived at home and girls stayed at home. And so what they accepted from their parents was very strong. And every single girl was able to accept the heritage of their parents, lehitnaheg bederech shadarchubo avotav, and to behave in the same way that their parents and their ancestors behaved. And that's exactly what Mesorah is, right? The Pasuk tells us, ask your father and he will tell you. And that's what the family structure was like. Kids stayed at home until they got married and then they left the house. And only then, certainly, girls did they leave the house. Well, if that's the case, right? When in previous generations, the girls literally did not leave their homes until they got married, and everything they learned came from their parents, well, then there's no need to teach them Torah. There was no need to teach them Torah in those generations because they learned everything they needed to know from their parents. Ka'et, but today, things are different. Ba'avonotinu harabim, kabalat ha'avot, nitrofifa me'od me'od. With our great sins, our heritage has weakened significantly. V'gam matzoi she'ena b'makom avot klal. And today, girls are leaving their parents' homes before they get married. They're living with friends. They're living on their own. They're going to new cities. They're not growing up the way that they used to in previous generations. Bifrat otan shemargilin atzman lilmod k'tav v'lashon ha'amim, and specifically those girls who are learning secular studies, right? They're learning how to write and learning how to speak in the language of the nations. Bivadai mitzvah rabba lilamed otan chumash v'gan nevi'im uktuvim u'musarei chazal. For those girls who are getting a secular education, and because they're going off the derech, because they're not provided with a parallel one in Judaism, then it's a mitzvah rabba to teach these girls Chumash and Navi and Ketuvim, meaning all of Tanakh, and Musarei Chazal, and the Sifrei Musar of Chazal, Kigon Masechet Avot v'Sefer Menorat HaMaor, like Perkei Avot and the Menorat HaMaor. Not only is it allowed, but it's a mitzvah to teach these girls Tanakh and Musar. Kidei Shetu'umat atzman inyan amanutau hakdosha, so that they will start to have a nice, sweet feeling toward our holy belief system. Im lokein alol sheyasur legamrei miderech Hashem. Because if we don't teach these women Torah, it is likely that they will completely go off the derech. And then they will violate every single foundation of our religion, chas v'shalom. And so this is the famous statement of the Chafetz Chaim 6 years before Sarah Schneer converted her dress shop into a one-room schoolhouse for Beis Yaakov. The Chafetz Chaim noticed this terrifying trend, that because the Jewish girls were supplied with a great secular education, but not a parallel Jewish one, they were leaving, they were going off the derech. And so the mitzvah, the Chafetz Chaim claimed, unbeknownst to Sarah Schneer, that it was a mitzvah to teach these girls Tanakh. But how could the Chafetz Chaim say this when it appears to go against Rabbi Eliezer's statement? There are two different ways of understanding the Chafetz Chaim here and why he did what he did and why he said what he said. There are those who believe that the Chafetz Chaim was invoking a classic concept, a basis behalacha called Eit Lasot Hefiru Torah. When it is time to do something, your Torah rules can be violated for that purpose. So the classic example of an Eit Lasot is when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi decided to write down the Mishnah. When he decided to write down Torah Sheba'al Peh. The oral Torah was meant to be kept oral, and it was never allowed to be written down, so it can never get into the hands of people who shouldn't be getting their hands on it. And yet Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi decided that it was time to write it down because it was being lost from the Jews when it remained oral. He wanted to write it down to prevent more people going further off the derech. And so similarly, some claim the Chafetz Chaim was thinking in the same way regarding the girls. Just like Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote down the oral Torah, which was not allowed, for the purpose of having more people keep Torah, the Chafetz Chaim decided that girls should learn Torah for the purpose of more girls staying with Judaism. Rav Willig disagrees with this understanding of the Chafetz Chaim. And he says that you don't have to invoke Eit Lasot Hashem Hefiru Torah. He believes that you don't even have to invoke this statement that the Chafetz Chaim was violating a mitzvah in the Torah so that he can prevent more lapses in Torah observance. No, he says, remember, the Rambam only codifies Rabbi Eliezer's statement, which was, by the way, just a piece of advice in the Gemara. And he only codifies it lahalacha, and the Shulchan Aruch only codifies it lahalacha with the statement, Tzivu Chachamim, with a statement that our rabbis advised, which we already discussed, is very much dependent on the time period. Right? Rabbis today don't advise that women don't walk out of their houses more than once a month. It's no longer an appropriate piece of advice. So too, Rav Willig holds the Chafetz Chaim felt that Tzivu Chachamim, Rabbi Eliezer's statement, was relevant for the times of the Rambam. And it was relevant again in the times of the Shulchan Aruch. And it was relevant again in the ensuing centuries. But that in the 20th century, it was no longer relevant. And he didn't have to invoke the Eit La'asot because he wasn't violating a precept in the Torah. He wasn't violating a halacha. He was just giving a different piece of rabbinic advice for a different generation. As we discuss, Sarah Schneerer, who lived at this time, she was a dressmaker in 1911, I believe, although the chronology, okay, I can't promise that. But she was certainly alive and well and learning Torah and on her own. She was definitely, almost definitely unaware of the Chafetz Chaim's footnote here. And yet she experienced the same situation, but more that the Chafetz Chaim saw, the same trends amongst Jewish girls. But Sarah Schneerer saw it much more intimately, because she was friends with a lot of these Jewish girls. She would try to give evening lectures to these Jewish girls. And it just wasn't working. And it was these trends that really motivated her to push against the norms of 20th century Eastern European society and establish a movement of Jewish education for girls in Poland. And it was actually the prototype established by Rav Hirsch in the 19th century with his Talmud Torah for girls. In Western Europe, the Sarah Schneerer kind of brought over to Eastern Europe in the beginning of the 20th century. When she saw these girls going off the derech, when she saw that they were so excited about everything that was going on in the secular world, but not at all excited about what was going on in the Jewish world, she recognized that the only way to keep these girls on the derech, the only way to get them excited about Judaism, was to give them a Jewish education that was just as stimulating as their secular one. And even more so, a Jewish education not only that would be challenging, but that would also be inspiring and impactful and lead them to greater Jewish observance and Shmirat HaMitzvot. If you turn to source number 6, again, I do not know how to pronounce Yiddish and I apologize, but Sarah Schneerer in her collected writings, I'm not even going to try to translate, to pronounce that word in Yiddish, writes as follows, and this is found in a wonderful book if you want to learn a little bit more about Sarah Schneerer's life, and I thank Chaya Tova Hartman for lending hers to me. It's called Carry Me in Your Heart by Revitzin Pearl Banish. And Sarah Schneerer wrote herself in these years. I used to work hard to supplement my family's income, often staying up until late in the night. Then I started to work on myself, on my own education, meaning after she worked at night, she would devote time to herself. Chok Yisrael, which my father so lovingly bought for me, became the source of my Jewish knowledge. There, in Yiddish translation, I followed every night the daily portion of Chumash, Nevi'im, Mishnah, and Gemara. I enjoyed it tremendously, as it enriched my understanding of the Jewish heritage and its beauty and depth of thought. She didn't go to Beis Yaakov, right? She had to teach herself from the Sefer. But I also took great interest in secular knowledge, education, history, world literature, etc. From time to time, to quench my thirst for knowledge, I attended lectures and speeches on various subjects at the Polish folk universities. So I tried to research Polish folk universities, but all I got was like folk dancing and folk music. I know that the Polish Free University was really, at her, during her time period, more of like a high school equivalent of education, just to give you a sense of what this meant. All these lectures were well attended by Jewish youth, who listened to them enthusiastically, since this was the only interesting knowledge available. I regretted going to those places, but unfortunately there was no Jewish environment to meet these needs of Jewish youth. I was happy to have my Jewish education with which I could censor what I heard. But what about the other girls? If only I could communicate the subjects that they were so eager to know, and at the same time inspire them with Torah wisdom and beauty of the Jewish heritage. If only I could. And if you turn to source number 7, where she writes in her diary, other girls would come up to me and ask which organization I belonged to. These were intelligent, idealistic young people who strove to find meaning in life, who searched for an ideal. I tried to explain to them what the true ideal is. However, their minds were already made up. They had all joined various organizations that stood for the popular isms of our time, innocently believing that they could lead to the true goal in life. Oh, if only I could establish an organization that would rebuff all those false ideas, an organization in which I could inspire young girls to embrace the Torah ideal and teach them how to love the Ribono Shel Olam, to emulate his waves of loving kindness, and to reach the true goal in life. Hashem, help me realize my dream. As Sarshner explains, the girls in interwar Eastern Europe were really caught up by all the isms, communism, Marxism, socialism. And unfortunately, they were lost to the most important ism of all, right? Judaism. Sarshner understood, just as the Chafetz Chaim had written, right, several years earlier, that really the only way to bring these girls back into the fold was to teach them, was to provide them with a Jewish education. And in this way, both the Chafetz Chaim and Sarshner actually intuited, or based their ideas on, I'm assuming the Chafetz Chaim knew this Rambam, what the Rambam had said centuries before. If you look in source number 8, the Rambam in a Sefer HaMitzvot tells us that mitzvah HaShlishi, this is the third mitzvah I say in the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot, he shetzivanu la'ahavo yitzaleh. This is the mitzvah of Ahavat Hashem. We have to love Hashem. V'zeshen et bonein v'naskil mitzvotav u'pu'ulotav. How do we reach the level of loving God? By understanding and intellectually comprehending his mitzvot and his actions, achinasi gehu, until the point that we completely comprehend him, v'nitaneg v'hashtagato tachlit hata'anug, and through understanding him, we will reach the pinnacle of enjoyment, v'zot hi ha'ava ha'michuyavet, and that enjoyment is the love that we are obligated in. V'lashon sifri, and the Sifri tells us, when it tells us to love Hashem, how do I do that? Tama Lomar, that's why it continues. How do you love Hashem? By placing these things that I command you today, the mitzvot, the Torah, by placing them on your heart. Because through knowing his Torah, that's how you can reach the love of Hashem and recognize him. And in this way, the Rambam, centuries before the Chafetz Chaim and Sarshner, teaches us that the best way to inspire people, to inspire within them a love of Hashem, is to have them learn Torah. Because through learning Torah, we can really recognize who Hashem is and appreciate him and understand him. In 1917, Sarshner, whose family was connected to the Belzer Rebbe, received a blessing from the Belzer Rebbe to educate girls on the Derech of Hashem. of traditional Judaism. It's unclear if the Belzer Rebbe completely understood that she wanted to start a formal Jewish educational system. Based on the note that her brother gave to the Belzer Rebbe, it seems that he just said, "My sister would like to educate girls in the ways of traditional Judaism," and he says, "Bracha v'atzlacha." So it's unclear if he knew that it was going to be formal schooling that he was giving his heter for his bracha for. But she took this as a blessing to move forward. She began with older girls. That didn't work so well because they'd already been exposed to secular education. They didn't really want anything to do with her. And so she then, in 1917, began with the young girls. Young girls of a select few families in the community who really felt strongly that their girls should receive an education. Due to her passion for Torah, her love of learning, and her love of Judaism, and her very, very inspiring personality, her students really, really loved her. Excuse me. Her thirst for knowledge was contagious. And after several years of increased enrollment each year in her Beis Yaakov school, in her one-room dress shop, her first graduates, who were not very old themselves, spread out to other cities in Eastern Europe. She was in Krakow. They spread out to other cities, I should say, in Poland, to establish their own Beis Yaakov schools in the surrounding cities. In 1923, so that started in 1917, got bigger and bigger and bigger. In 1923, the Agudas Yisrael, backed the fledgling Beis Yaakov movement, both in terms of financial support, but also in terms of philosophical endorsement. They are the ones who started asking Rabbanim to give their haskamot to the Beis Yaakov movement, including the Gera Rebbe. It should be noted, though, that in the 1920s, the Beis Yaakov movement was still controversial. And especially outside of Poland, there was pushback, and not all the Rebbeim wanted to include this new system of Jewish education for girls in their towns. However, as time progressed, the Chafetz Chaim's position became much more accepted, and in the 1930s, and again after World War II, the Beis Yaakov movement just grew and grew and grew and spread throughout the entire world, to Australia, to the United States, to, you know, all different countries in Europe, etc. And to the point that it was literally on almost every single continent where Jews lived, there were Beis Yaakov schools. There was one great exception to this trend, and that was the Satmar Rav, Rav Yoel Teitelbaum. And Satmar Rav believed that Torah study was still forbidden because it was forbidden by the Shulchan Aruch, and that it's still Usser. And the Satmar Rav held, and I believe that the Satmar community still holds, that it's even more so forbidden for women to learn Torah in today's very permissive society. That to counteract the permissiveness of today's society, we have to make sure that our girls are not given access to a Jewish education in the way that the Chafetz Chaim had condoned. Of course, she needs to know the mitzvot that apply to her, but he believed that she should not learn them from the text. Rather, she should learn them from her mother and her grandmother and her mother-in-law, the way that we have been doing for generations. There are Satmar girls' schools, where they learn the Torah stories in Yiddish, where they learn stories and legends of tzaddikim in Yiddish. They might learn some Medrash and they might learn some Musar as well. But they do not learn Tanakh and they do not learn anything in Hebrew because that might make them Zionists.
What was that word?
Sorry, Zionists. Now, we basically see that in the early years and from the early to middle 20th century, the idea of Jewish education kind of really spread, primarily based on the Chafetz Chaim, and really also because the Chafetz Chaim from, you know, a Hashkafic standpoint, and the Gera Rebbe and the Belzer Rebbe, and practically because of Sarah Schneer's Beis Yaakov movement and the passion for Torah learning that she not only taught her own students, but that her students took from her and brought even further. From the middle of the 20th century and going into the later decades, the question arose as to whether women should be taught Torah Sheba Al Peh. The Chafetz Chaim had a huge chiddush that women should be taught Torah Sheba Chtav and Perkei Avot and Musar. But soon, right, decades later, the question arose as to whether women should learn Torah Sheba Al Peh. Perhaps because times continued to change. Whereas in the Chafetz Chaim's time, for the first time, girls were given access to a secular education on an elementary school level. Therefore, they needed something parallel in the Jewish realm. In the 1950s and beyond, girls began to attend universities, colleges, graduate schools, and they began to access even greater secular education. And not only were they accessing the content of these classes in secular universities, but they were also being instilled with the values that academia was really, you know, pushing. The values of analysis, of intense and rigorous discussion and challenging of ideas that we had assumed and assumptions that we've had until now, and trying to push the envelope and trying to really question and try to really understand what's going on. And it became a question that, well, if the girls are given access to this level of education with these levels of analysis and these tools, well, you know, might it be a problem if they're not given the same access in the Jewish realm? Very parallel to the question that the Chafetz Chaim was, you know, really had asked himself. Interestingly, the Rambam himself, in source number 9, in Hilchot Yisodei HaTorah, tells us that Ani Omer She'ein Ra'oi L'Tayel B'Pardes. I say that it's not worthy to, now in literal translation, this means to take a walk in an orchard. But what it really means in the Rambam's way of talking is that a person should not engage in metaphysical studies, he calls it parties, Pshat Drash Remez and Sod, Ela Mishinit Malei Kriso Lechem Mubasar. The only person who should walk in the orchard is someone who is full of bread and meat. What does that mean? It means that the only person who should learn metaphysics and natural sciences, I think, is also what this is referring to, should be full of bread and meat. What does that mean? V'lechem u'basar hu leida ha'asor v'hamutar u'kiyoseh behem yishar mitzvot. That a person can only be ready to learn metaphysics and the natural sciences if he's already learned the Gemara. Everything that's asor and mutar, etc. Re'uyin hein la'at diman. The words of the Gemara should precede any knowledge gained in metaphysics or natural sciences. Shehein miyashvin da'atosha adam tchila. Because they really settle one's knowledge and understanding first, and then he's ready to engage in all these secular pursuits. So again, based on what girls were doing in the mid and late 20th centuries, and of course today, the question arose, you know, if the Rambam claims that you need Gemara in order to understand all these other things that are required by liberal arts colleges, well, then maybe the girls should have access to that as well. And in fact, in 1967, in source number 10, the Tzitz Eliezer addresses this question. And he says, "Bidin li mutor sheval peh v'shevechtav l'nashim." What does he say? Masha Shoal al Piskan Shal Rambam. Okay, so then he quotes a lot of things. At the end of the line, De Asar Lalami Torah Shabal Pele Nashim, Vigan Torah Shabachtav Asar Lalam Dant Lechachila. That which was asked about the Rambam, that it is forbidden to teach Torah Shabal Pele, the oral Torah, to women, and even Torah Shabachtav Lechachila, even the written Torah in an ideal way shouldn't be taught to them. Mehad Tanino Bitosefto Beperach Bet Debrachot. From that which we learn in the Tosefta that is quoted in Brachot, Halacha Yud Bet, V'huva B'Yerushalmi, V'zeh Lashono. What do we learn in the Medrash? I'm sorry, in the Tosafta. Hazavin v'hazavot v'hanidot v'hayoldot mutarin likro b'Torah. A zav, a man who issues impurity. A zava, a woman who has an impure flow. A nida, a menstruating woman. V'hayoledet, the yoldo, a birthing woman. Mutarin likro b'Torah, they're able to read the Torah. Ulishanot b'mishnah, and they're able to learn the Mishnah. B'medrash b'halacha u'v'agadah, and they're able to learn medrash and halacha and stories. Harei d'nikita la'la tosefta k'davar pashat. The Tosefta assumes as obvious d'isha mutara b'limud kol ila, that a regular woman who's not impure can learn all these things. D'hainu hein ha-torah shevechtav v'hein ha-torah shevalpeh, and all these things include both the written Torah and the oral Torah. I don't know exactly what that stands for, but something that's mentioned above. Right? And obviously, this is a Kal V'Chomer. Right? This is Tosefta is telling us that a woman who is impure is allowed to learn Torah, both Bichtav and Baal Peh. So Kal V'Chomer, can a woman who is pure, who's not impure, a regular, normal woman, can obviously learn these things. What's his basis for this, that women can suddenly learn Torah Shabbat Peh? Look at Zayin. V'akoin ha-gadol me'achav ha-gon ha-tzadek ha-baal Chafetz Chaim zechorno levracha v'sefer likutei halachot ha-sota shada nirga kema b'chol ikara shal nehigat halacha zot le'isar. The Chafetz Chaim threw an axe at the foundation of the Isar. That we're not allowed to lima Torah l'nashim izmanas, that we're not allowed to teach women Torah in today's day and age. The Tzitz Eliezer claims that when the Chafetz Chaim said that during his time period, girls could learn Torah, yes, he seemed to limit it to Torah Shabbatav and to Musar, but the Tzitz Eliezer claims that the Chafetz Chaim basically threw an axe to the Isser in the first place. If a woman is allowed to learn some things, then she should be able to learn everything. Well, the Kleisenberger Rebbe was not very happy with this, and we're not going to do it inside in the interest of time, but in source number 11, the Kleisenberger Rebbe basically attacks the Tzitz Eliezer and says, how could you say this? If you say that, oh, times have changed, then anyone can come and say with anything that times have changed, this is a slippery slope. What else are you going to come up with? Random students of Torah are going to come and say, you know, we can do whatever we want. How can you say this? And further, he says, I read the Chafetz Chaim myself, and the Chafetz Chaim himself only talks about Torah Shebichtav. So why are you saying that it applies also to Torah Shebaal Peh? To which the Tzitz Eliezer responds in source number 12. Again, we are not going to do it inside. But to which the Tzitz Eliezer responds, I'm sorry, but in my humble opinion, you are just wrong. And he explains that there is no room. Basically, what he says is that I think it's best to allow everything to be permissible, lechachila, not just because times have changed, although also because times have changed, but not only because times have changed, also because it's lechachila appropriate for women to be fully involved in Torah learning. Now, both the Tzitz Eliezer and the Kleisenberger Rebbe were gedolim. They knew what they were talking about. And because of their exchange, the debate that they had in 1967 has raged on through today. And so what I would like to do over the next several moments is to just give you some sources about the machloket that still we see today. So Rav Moshe, who is a very, very well-known and very well-regarded posek, was asked in, I think it was like in the 1980s, although I can't 100%. Oh no, it was the 1960s or 70s. There was a Beis Yaakov school in Philadelphia where the Hanhala, the administration, and the teachers wanted to introduce Mishnayot to the girls. They wanted to teach Mishnayot. So they sent a Shaila, or someone sent a Shaila from Philadelphia to Rav Moshe asking if this would be appropriate. And Rav Moshe answers in source number 13, second line, meaning first paragraph, Hini b'davar sh'nimtzu batei sefer l'yaladot u'l'na'arot sh'nikru'u b'shem b'Yaakov u'kedoma sh'rotzim ha'hanala v'amorim l'lmod imahen mishnayo. Right, this issue that they want to learn with the girls mishnayo. Hini b'ramam, etc. It says sh'ein l'lami levanot Torah achu mechalik. Right, the Rambam says you can't teach daughters Torah, but he separates she'ki'ilu milam da tiflet hu v'torah shebal peh, that v'ki'ilu lim da tiflet, the negative piece is only about Torah shebal peh, u v'torah shebachtav, eno kimilam da tiflet, but with Torah shebachtav, it's not like teaching her tiflet, ashe l'chachila gam, zeh ein l'lamed, even Torah shebachtav, we shouldn't teach l'chachila, al kol panim, mishnayot shehu Torah shebal peh, tzivu chachamim shalo yilmedum, v'hu ki'ilu limdum tiflet. Teaching Mishnayot to girls, says Rav Moshe, is like teaching her Tiflut. We shouldn't do it. Therefore, we should prevent the school from doing so. And the only part of Torah Shabbat Peh that we should teach him is Pirkei Avot. Mishum shehu in yani musar hanagot tovot, because it teaches, you know, musar, it teaches good behavior, and that we yesh lalamdam behezber la'oran, and that we should explain to them and inspire them, right? La'oran la'ava toro ulamidot tovo, because we want our girls to develop into good people. Aval lo she'ar ha'masechto, but we should not teach them the other masechto in Torah Shabbat Peh, umitoch ha'pshitot ektar. And because this is so obvious, I'm going to stop here. And so Rav Moshe holds that just like the Chafetz Chaim said, Torah Shebichtav and Pirkei Avot are fine, Musar is fine, Torah Shebaal Peh, Mishnayot, not fine. Rav Soloveitchik, in 1937, okay, so this predates this tshuva, founded a school in Boston, Maimonides School, it's called. You guys might have heard of it as Maimo. And it was co-ed, and the girls and boys learned Torah together. So just from that, we know what Rav Soloveitchik's feeling is. But in 1953, he actually writes an answer to a shaila he received in source number 14. First, apologizing for being late. And he says, as to your question, end of the second line. As to your question with regard to a curriculum in a coeducational school, I expressed my opinion to you long ago that it would be a very regrettable oversight on our part if we were to arrange separate Hebrew courses for girls. Not only is the teaching of Torah Shebaal Peh to girls permissible, but it is nowadays an absolute imperative. This policy of discrimination between the sexes as to subject matter and method of instruction, which is still advocated by certain groups within our Orthodox community, has contributed greatly to the deterioration and downfall of traditional Judaism. In 1953, remember, Orthodoxy was viewed as being on the way down, and the conservative movement was on the rise. And Rav Soloveitchik said that this is largely because we don't educate our girls in the same way as we educate our boys. Boys and girls alike should be introduced to the inner halls of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's very clear from here that the Rav supported the teaching of Torah Shebaal Peh to women. Not only did he believe that it was permissible, but he believed that it was imperative. And I just want to read to you really quickly from source number 15. I'll leave the Rav Aharon pieces. You guys can read them on your own. But Rabbi Saul Berman recently published in Lehr House an article about the first Gemara Shir that the Rav gave in Stern College. And he talks in the beginning, the first paragraph, actually, it's important. In late 1976, Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's son, and I met to discuss Jewish studies at Stern College for women. Dr. Soloveitchik told me that he never understood why Talmud was not being more systematically taught at Stern College. He had been raised with the impression that it was natural for women to study Talmud. As a child, Dr. Soloveitchik had studied with his father, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, together with his older sisters, Atara and Tova, ultimately Lichtenstein. When he began at the age 10 studying Talmud with the Rav, Dr. Soloveitchik joined as a junior participant in their class, in the girls' class. The same culture was manifest at Maimonides School in Boston, which his father and mother, Dr. Tanya Soloveitchik, had founded, and where boys and girls studied Talmud in the same classes. It was a Monday, bless you, October 11th, 1977. The Rav entered the Beit Midrash accompanied by Dr. Lamb and Dean Bacon. The room fell utterly silent. The sense of awe was palpable as all stood until the Rav took his seat at the front table. If you're interested, the picture of this famous shir is on the front of your source sheets. Next to a large Talmud folio, the students had already begun studying the 10th chapter of Psachim. However, the Rav had decided that he would lecture on the opening Mishnah of the tractate to introduce some of the fundamental ideas of the tractate. He started the shir in his unique manner, weaving a web of intellectual excitement and spiritual engagement, which enmeshed the students present into the world of the Rav's own mind and soul. There was no fundamental difference between the Rav's Stern College Talmud lecture and any other shir that he might have delivered at YU or elsewhere. I knew, however, the Rav would somehow mark the occasion. As he concluded the shir, Rabbi Soloveitchik reflected on the experience of Talmud study. He remarked on being in the presence of his predecessors, the sages of the Mishnah and the Talmud, the Rishonim like the Rambam, the Vilna Gaon, and of course his grandfather Rav Chaim, as he struggled to penetrate the deepest will of God as expressed in the Halacha. This is how he closed the lecture. They are all right here in the room. When a Jew recites Kiddush Levana, so he proclaims, David, the king of Israel, is alive. He, King David, is right here. This exactly applies not only to David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. It applies to every Rishon, every scholar, and every member of the community of the Mesorah, which formulated Torah Shebaal Peh, which lived Torah Shebaal Peh and experienced Torah Shebaal Peh, who remembers the past and who has uncompromised hope for the future. That's why I am very glad that you invited me to come to give your first shir. And I hope actually a year later to see that you've displayed interest in Torah Shebaal Peh. Without Torah Shebaal Peh, there is no Judaism. Any talk about Judaism minus Torah Shebaal Peh is just meaningless and absurd. Like if one never studied physics and writes the philosophy of nature. It's ridiculous. You can't write the philosophy of nature before you are acquainted with physics. So you cannot write about Judaism if you are not acquainted with Torah Shebaal Peh. It's important that not only boys should be acquainted, but girls as well. I'll support you as far as education is concerned. If you have problems, come to me. I'll fight your battles. I wish you success, bracha v'atzlacha. I hope that next year you'll know a lot more. As the Rav concluded, the students stood in silence. They were overwhelmed by his presence and by his encouragement. Before the Rav departed, he said to me, tell them that if their fathers or brothers say to them, what are you doing learning Gemara, bistach nora medel? Tell them not to answer them. They should refer the fathers and brothers to me. I will answer for them. And so as you'll see on the next two pages, which I am not going to read, Rav Aharon Soloveitchik followed very much in his father-in-law's footsteps. And I just want to read maybe one paragraph in source number 17, which I think is beautiful, to end the shir on. If we ask ourselves, and he quotes the pasuk, here are the goals. What are the goals of Judaism? Liyira, le'ava, la'avod, lishmor, le'davka, la'lecha, v'chol drachav. Our goals are to fear God, to love God, to serve God, to cling to Him, to go in all His ways. What are the means? We know what the goals are. How do we achieve those goals? What are the means to those ends? Traditionally, over the centuries, there has been a fairly sharp dichotomy precisely regarding this very issue, namely the means to be employed in relation to men versus women, even as the same goals of Ve'ata Yisrael, right? Moshe addressed these goals to all of B'nai Yisrael, not only to the male species, right? Right? They were known to be addressed to men and to women alike. Intensive study was central and crucial with respect to Bacharim, with respect to men. While with regard to women, with regard to whom it was assumed the emphases were to be different, perhaps the balance between Torah and Chesed should be different. That aspect of intensive study was often regarded to be different. This is not the occasion to examine whether that was justified historically. What is clear, however, is that notwithstanding how one judges the past retrospectively, in our present historical and social setting, we need to view the teaching and learning of girls and women as both a major challenge and as well as a primary need. I will not continue, but you will see as you continue over Aaron's art, really this is a speech, at the founding of Maya Note, full disclosure, I taught there for 5 years. And he speaks about how the goal for every human being, for every member of B'nai Yisrael, is to love Hashem, to fear Hashem, to cling to Him. And if it's the case that for women as well as men, their connection to Hashem will be enhanced through Talmud Torah, that we feel closer to Hashem by learning His words, then by all means we should be involved in it. And so I hope that with this understanding of both sides of the issue, of those who support it and those who don't support it, we can understand where different, you know, members of our community stand and why they stand and why they have those opinions. And we can also hopefully derive inspiration for our own connection to Hashem through learning Torah. Have a great night, and thank you for coming. Thank you.